Well, I've got a good idea. We just had Dr. James Canton on for 2 hours. He's a futurist. His book is The Extreme Future. But you know what? I think all of you out there are probably, if not as good, very nearly every bit as good as he is in a lot of ways. And I don't in any way mean to belittle his talents. You know, he's got a PhD in all this. But when it comes to the Earth's carrying capacity, when it comes to our changing climate, when it comes to the possibility of diseases, when it comes to what's going on with America and the world, longevity, fuel, energy, all the rest of that, I just think that a lot of you are, in a lot of ways, every bit as good at looking at the future as a futurist, as Dr. Canton or many others. So how about it? What do all of you see? And just say the next 10 or 20 years, what do you see ahead for the United States, for the world? I'm curious. Let's go to open lines and find out. That or anything else you want to talk about, fair game coming right up. I'm Art Bell. All right, we take the big plunge into open lines. And again, anything you want to talk about is fair game. But I just think that a lot of you are certainly up on what's going on in the world. My God, we read you stories every week, week in and week out, many of them ahead of what you hear in the mainstream press. And so your prognosis for what's up with the world, I think, is nearly as good as anybody else's. So let's explore that a little bit. And of course, remember, toward the end of the year, I think I'm going to pick up a few extra days. We're going to do the traditional. And by the way, I did come up with a list of predictions, fortunately, that were made for 2006. So we're going to be able to review those, thank heavens, and go on to predict what you think is coming for 2007. That's certainly not what I'm soliciting at the moment. More of a generalized look into the future is what I'm suggesting we perhaps discuss right now, but open lines is what it's all about. First time caller line, Lou in New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yeah, Art, Lou in New Jersey.
Right.
I have a hypothetical question about time travel.
All right.
If, let's say someone developed either a device or a method to travel, and for instance, they did it and they were in Kansas City, and that was the point they started off at.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how long they're gone or whether they go to the future or the past, because the Earth turns on its axis and because the Earth revolves around the sun, do you think the travel would come back to the spot he left, which might even be empty space, or the spot that the method took him from?
Well, one would hope that he would come back to the same rough space. Now, I understand what you're saying. The Earth is, of course, all the time moving, and so would you suddenly appear, for example, in empty space, a place where the Earth currently is not? And I suppose that's a possibility. But one would hope, whatever time travel method they came up with, that it would automatically return you to the Earth. But it's a very good question, and I don't have the full answer to it, that's for sure. If I did, I guess we'd have a time machine already, and we'd be traveling. So his question has been asked by many, and that is, of course, that the Earth is in orbit around the sun. So if you did time travel, would you suddenly appear in the vacuum of space, which wouldn't do you a whole lot of good, would it? Wildcard line, Sean in New York, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Canton alluded to the supposition that he said that he thought that certain aspects of climate change were irreversible.
That's correct.
Well, I don't know that that's entirely that's my opinion is a bit different. I think climate change is reversible, and it's reversible, in at least in my opinion, to whatever extent we'd like to make it.
By what method?
By what method? Yes, the method would involve The oceans, as you know, the oceans are saline bodies of water. They contain salt. And as you may know, that if you've ever been seen in a high school chemistry class, for example, when a piece of ice is put in a beaker full of fresh water and a beaker full of salt water, the ice in the salt water will evaporate quicker than it will in the fresh. My point is that it could be possible to construct evaporation fields in places like the Great Sonora Desert, perhaps, and in Saudi Arabia, wherein relatively large quantities of seawater would be pumped in during the summer and spring and fall months when it's always very, very hot, to evaporate that seawater on a daily basis during the day, and then at night the salt would be collected by trucks, let's say, and gathered up and compressed, for example, into little blocks, which would then be sheathed in, let's say, quarter-inch plexiglass, and then those blocks could be used in construction projects to build boats for various and sundry different purposes, somewhat like the glass blocks. If you've ever seen glass blocks in buildings, in construction projects.
Yes, I'm trying to picture, though, how this changes the global climate.
By steadily decreasing the salinity by literally taking the salt out of the equation, such as it is. It's a mathematical equation.
But that's the problem we're having right now, is the decreasing salinity of the oceans. In other words, as the ice at the North Pole and or South Pole or Greenland or wherever else melts, the salinity of the oceans is decreasing, causing problems.
By decreasing the salinity in places where the ocean is overly saline, say like drawing the water from the Gulf of California, for example, or from the Red Sea, where the salinity content is very, very high, it would reverse it over time.
Why?
Why?
Yes.
Because it would reduce the overall saline content, and the ice would be less susceptible to melting.
The ice would. I see. By having less salt. I don't think I necessarily follow that as logical. Right now, we are having a significant problem with the ocean currents because of the decreasing salinity of many parts of the oceans. Or at least that's my understanding of what the scientists are saying. That as much of the ice melts, we get less salinity in the oceans, and some of the ocean currents that we depend on for moderating climates, for example, Europe's climate, are in quite a bit of danger. So if we were to remove more salt from the oceans, which I guess with the process he talked about certainly would be possible, I'm not sure we wouldn't make the problem worse. I don't know. I'm obviously not a scientist, but it didn't sound right to me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air, Liz.
Hi, Art. Hi.
Hi.
Long-time listener, by the way, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've tried to call a few times with a shadow person story from when I was 15. My mom had a very, very severe stroke when I was 15, and she was reading in the National Enquirer an ad for this book written by a husband and wife team. They called themselves witches.
Mm-hmm.
She got this book, and she was reading it to my Nana, and I could hear her reading it out loud from my bedroom. I was just lying on my stomach reading a book.
Yes.
And while she was reading this, and I could hear this blather that she was reading, I just kind of saw something out of the corner of my eye in the hallway, and it was the shadow of a man, just a dark shadow of a man with a fedora hat, and he looked like the silhouette of the Exorcist looking up at the window in the Exorcist, in the poster of the Exorcist.
Oh, yes.
And I said, my God, what is that thing? And I got off the bed. I didn't know what it was. And the shadow literally just ran down the wall and ducked into the little tiny alcove, into the bathroom, and then it was gone. And then so I told I told my nana, I said, you know, we got to get that book out of the house, because I think that things like that open windows to problems, much like a Ouija board.
That maybe, Liz. I'm not sure. I do agree that windows to another universe or the other side or however we want to think of it can be opened by things like Ouija boards and perhaps the reading of that book. But it may be that the two were totally disconnected. Now, the phenomena of shadow people is something else again, and it appears to be increasing exponentially. More and more people are seeing what may be artifacts from another universe, little flashes and little pieces of what may be from another universe. It's really a fascinating phenomena and one that I'm going to continue to watch, shadow people. And they're generally described in the way she just did, with these fedora hats. And I don't know, it's a strange phenomena, but more and more people are beginning to see them for whatever reason. Wildcard line, Jim in Cleveland, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. Pertaining to the future and addressing the inevitable, do you, Art, see any significant change in the way we manage our future funeral arrangements? Cemeteries currently are accommodating the dead, but geographically, things are significantly sprawling. Where I live in Northeast Ohio, I see evidence that a plot may soon be prime real estate. So in short, Catholic or not, could cremation not just be an alternative in the future, but a necessity?
It certainly could. Yes, of course it could. As the billions pile up, so to speak, both of the living and the dead, yes, what you're saying, I mean, there's one thing that God, other than the recent addition of a volcanic island, which we think appeared, is not making any more of, and that's real estate.
There you go. Well, Art, thanks very much for your time.
You're very welcome, and have a good day. It's true. Real estate has inevitably always been one of the very best investments you could make because, as I just said, God is not making any more of it, generally. So he makes a very good point. The number of dead will continue to pile up, and the Western tradition, and I'm not sure it's not just the West, of burying people may eventually become a thing of the past. It may have to. Let's go to wildcard line 3 and say, Vance, you are on the air. Hello.
Well, hello, Art. I've been listening for about a decade, and I've never called before. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
The first thing I'd like to say is I'm very empathetic with you guys in the Philippines. I'm calling from beautiful downtown Katrinaville.
Uh-huh.
Very, very nice. El Nino has kept our currents to keep the storms out in the Atlantic, and you're getting it all this year.
That's fact.
That
and
is
we've had some really wicked ones.
In fact, the last
typhoon that we had over, I think, about a 6 to 10 hour period, dropped 75 millibars, which would have been one of the largest drops, the fastest drops in all of history.
Well, I went through it in a truck just north of Biloxi and at 170 miles an hour. And I'm here talking to you.
In 2005, the cost of Katrina was $210 billion, $120 billion of which was inflicted directly by the hurricane.
The Washington insiders are, we're going to wind up with about 2%, and everybody else is getting fat. I still haven't received hardly anything from anybody. So I'm now presently living in the middle of a national forest in a deer camp. And thank God to have it. I'm not in the Katrina box anymore.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of really bad stories about Katrina survivors. Katrina was the first weather event to create climate refugees in the kind of numbers that we're talking about here. The cost of that storm could have been even higher. It could have hit the wealthiest parts of New Orleans. Those were largely spared from the flood. But make no mistake about it, though it has been a light year due to weather patterns here in the Pacific, it has not. And so when those patterns switch, it's going to be right back to the boiling plate for the Gulf Coast and Florida and other areas of the East Coast. I mean, it's just, it's getting rougher and rougher and rougher. 1 year in the clear does not put you in the clear. We're going to face increasingly violent weather. There's simply no question about it. How we deal with it, I don't know. On the first time caller line from Tennessee, Matt, you're the one.
Hello, am I on?
Yes.
Hello, Art. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a listener for about a year, and I'm totally addicted to it. Anyway, I wanted to talk about the end times.
Okay.
I believe they're here. I believe that we are going to face a new age within the next 10 years.
How do you think this will manifest? I mean, there are so many possibilities. Our guests talked about many of them, disease, weather changes, the changes of economies and science and all the rest of it. How do you think these end times will manifest?
Well, I think that they've already manifest. I think that as far as the Bible talks about how the skies will be filled with grasshoppers, planes looking, you know, like grasshoppers, and they are rumors of wars.
Wars and rumors of wars. Well, that we've always had that.
Well, especially now with the nuclear crisis that we've got going on, and I really don't see my future going any further than you know, 20 years, you know.
And by that, you mean you don't see the world's future going more than another 20 years? Is that correct,
right?
Or just your own personal future?
Right. Well, no, both.
Both. Okay, well, I hope you're wrong. I hope that's incorrect. Hold on a sec. Man has always carried signs around saying the end is near, or this is it, and quoted the Bible. And, of course, eventually, I guess, the Bible will be correct and there will be an end. But we all hope that our children will have a better life than we had. I don't know that that's going to be true anymore. Do you remember a few elections ago when I think it was Ronald Reagan who won by suggesting that everybody review their lifestyle and ask themselves if they were better off now than they were 4 years ago? Remember that? I thought that was a catchy little phrase. It certainly worked very well at the time. But if you ask yourself that question now, right now, are you better off than you were 4, 8, or 10 years ago? What is your answer? What is your answer? Are you better off? Do you have a better lifestyle? Are you getting more and working less? I'm not sure how you define a good lifestyle, but I would think it's perhaps greater riches, more comfort with less work. In the United States, people are working their tail ends off. They tend not to take vacations, as Europeans do so much. They're very, very hard workers. And do they have a better lifestyle? Is it easier to buy that first house? Is it easier to feed your family than it was 4 or 8 years ago? Or is it tougher? So when you ask yourself that question, if the answer is no, it's much harder to feed my family, it's much harder to secure my home and all the rest of it, then what is another 10 or 20 years going to bring? If you can articulate that, then I guess that makes you a futurist. Indeed. Sean in Toronto, Canada says, cremation will be mandatory. It's going to be because of the future zombie threat, not cemetery overcrowd. And, you know, it's interesting, Sean, that you would fast blast that to me. I just finished watching yet another zombie movie last night, and I can't recall the name of it, but But it was like the Night of the Living Dead. And I've noticed there have been more and more of those movies lately. And I guess they're particularly cool because nobody can say much to you about mindless violence when you're killing the already dead. Nobody minds killing the already dead. And, of course, you have to make it a headshot because, and I was wondering about that. What difference does it make if you're a zombie? What difference does it make whether you're shot in the head or not? But it seems to be the only way you can kill a zombie in the movies anyway, is a direct headshot. And maybe one of you will think of the name of this movie. It had this machine in it whose chief job was to protect this enclave of rich people. But the zombies, of course, broke through all the barriers and, for the most part, until the very end, ate the rich people. Anyway, I've noticed that mindless violence in zombie movies is perfectly all right. It doesn't matter. You can see people munching on other people. You can see endless number of people shot and mowed down by machine guns because they're already dead. Killing the already dead seems to be an okay thing to do. Back to open lines we go. Anything you want to talk about is fair game, but we are sort of generally talking about the future. Let's go to wildcard line 3. It's Paul in Chicago. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing, George? I just wanted to talk about the futurist that was on earlier, and he was talking
Wait a sec. Sure. George is not here. I'm Art. I think George is pretty well.
Sorry,
he's probably
sorry,
relaxing
sorry,
over
sorry,
the weekend.
I'm sorry, Art. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Art. No, I just wanted to speak about the gentleman that was on earlier talking about futurism and about AIDS. Well, there was already a show done on either National Geographic or also done on Discovery Channel that talked about AIDS and the connection with the Black Plague, that explained that there was a gay man that was out here in the United States that they've done tests on his blood and found that he's immune to the AIDS and HIV.
And actually, there are quite a number of prostitutes in Africa that also have been shown to be immune to the AIDS virus.
Yeah, and with that, a lot of people, you know, from that, I have understood that some people are thinking that it's actually been created in the lab, the AIDS virus that's going around now. And what he was talking about, the AIDS virus that's the stronger AIDS that you had mentioned, Art.
Well, yeah. What I mentioned is that I've been hearing rumors, and I don't want to start any panic because that's all they are is rumors at this point. But I have been unfortunately hearing rumors of strains of the AIDS virus that are not treatable with the current life extending drugs that they have. Now, what they can do right now generally is to reduce the viral count in your body so that you live longer. It still eventually kills you. They may come up with a vaccine for AIDS eventually, or even a cure for AIDS. Who knows? But right now, about the best they can do, it is my understanding, is to reduce the viral count in your body through sort of a cocktail of antiviral medicines, and that extends your life. But I'm hearing these rumors that in Africa, they have now begun to see strains that are not affected by these antiviral drugs. I hope that's inaccurate. West of the Rockies, Don in Washington, you're on the air.
John.
In Washington. Well, it says Don, but okay. If it's John, so be it.
I put you down in the queue of quality. Thank you, sir, very much. I'm really surprised that I actually got through. I'll make it as fast as I can. I do have a couple of questions. You've heard of Eagle Rock or Crow's Nest in Washington and in California, I'm sorry.
Navy. Yes, I have.
Yeah. In 93, my wife and I were driving up to Bellingham, Washington, and we were approached by some kind of a bat-like creature. Not a creature, I guess. I really thought it was man-made, and it had flexible wings, and it was dead silent. We had a
Was it flying or was it walking?
Pardon?
Was it flying or was it
on
the ground?
It was flying. It was flying above us.
Okay.
And it flew up as quickly as it could, stopped, and we were doing about 60, 70 on the freeway, and wow.
What do you mean it stopped?
It stopped and it observed us.
That's eerie.
Yeah, but I heard similar things on your shows, and I thank you so much for your shows. They're so fun and very entertaining and informing.
Okay, John, I appreciate the call. I don't know what that... Maybe that was the American equivalent of Filipino asphalt. I don't know. Something that was bat-like. And the stopping part floors me a little bit. I don't know what can fly and what can stop. Not in the animal world, anyway. Maybe a hummingbird. That's about all I'm aware of that can do that. Let's go to this line and say it's Jim in Alabama.
How you doing, Art? I've been listening to you for about 10 years now. I was an over-the-road truck driver for a while, various other jobs. And I was curious, you may have told the audience, but I don't think I ever heard, how did Father Martin actually die? Was it in an exorcism?
No.
No? Have you ever released that?
The story that I got, Jim, was that Father Martin fell down a stairway. And then was in the hospital for a period of time and then passed. So he fell down some steps. There are rumors, of course, that there was something else involved, but I don't feel qualified or have the information to comment on them.
Well, I did hear, I believe it was the second really long interview that you did. I want to say it was before George took over, like in 99 or 2000.
Oh, it would have been long before, yes.
Was it before then?
Oh, yes.
Well, I remember one of the interviews that you had done, it might have been earlier, where he said that when he did those exorcisms, the spirits that he pulled out or that he dealt with or whatever stuck around him and to torment him for the rest of his life. Is that a possibility that it had something to do with his demise?
Of course it's possible. I have no way of knowing for sure, Jim. As I mentioned to you, the only thing I know, and toward the end, when Father Martin was in the hospital, those around him controlled the information very strictly, very strongly. Almost nothing about his final days got out, or about the accident that allegedly took his life. So I don't know a lot about it. I would like to know more. But I do know that those who were close to him, those that were caring for him, simply didn't report very much about what happened at the end. I mean, there was just an extreme control of information. East of the Rockies, Mary, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I've never talked to anybody on the other side of the world, so thanks. You're my first.
Okay.
I have stumbled upon some strange things here lately, and you're just the person to talk to about. I'm a registered nurse, and I have been out for several months due to a recent injury, and I have met several Muslim, Arab men of Muslim persuasion, like used car lots, that kind of thing. And, you know, it seems very, very strange to me. They have no family. They haven't seen their family in, 15, 17, 20 years. Long, long, long periods of time. They don't appear to be putting down roots. They all seem to go to gather, like, in places like Alabama for the weekend. It's very strange. And let me tie that to this comment. If they ever, or if anyone ever really wanted to do damage to this nation, do you realize that to basically import HIV-infected men, young men, single men, with lots of money and access to, you know, whatever kind of indulgence people like. Do you realize that before we even realized what had even happened, how many people could be infected?
Yeah, Mary, I do. It's not just HIV either. There have been quite a number of novels based on terrorist action of that sort. In other words, for example, you get an outbreak of SARS, and the Chinese government, of course, very strictly confined the areas. You can do that when you're a dictatorship. Or bird flu, or some other Ebola, or some sort of a disease of that nature. And there have been a number of books and movies based on terrorists getting in, getting a sample of the blood, and then simply distributing it across North America. And that kind of thing could occur. That's the kind of day and age we live in. And so when you look at the future, I'm sorry to say, that's one of the things that you have to be concerned about when you have a group of people, small or large as you may believe them to be, who simply want us dead. People who are willing to sacrifice. It's very, very difficult to stop anybody who's willing to sacrifice their own life to kill you, or I'm sorry to say in this modern day and age, to kill many. So that's something we have to worry about. If you ever get an opportunity to see 12 Monkeys, be sure and take a look at that movie. That's one of them suggestive of that sort of thing. Fourth wildcard line, Roger in Nebraska, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. With all this technology that we have, for example, me talking to you in Nebraska, you being on the other side of the world, why is it, Art, that they can come up with technology for cordless phones? What I mean by that is, you know, the little button on your cordless phone, if you ever lose it, you can push it and it'll start beep. Your phone will beep. It'll let you know where it's at.
Yes.
Well, I'm always losing my remote control for my television. Why don't they put a button on my TV?
Well, because we all know it's behind the couch. No, it's a good point. Why don't they put a button on the TV to press so that your remote control begins to beep? It's a very good idea. And I'm sure some manufacturer out there will hear that and take it up if they haven't already done it. All remotes should be equipped with that kind of deal. It is amazing, isn't it? I marvel. I'm in the communications business, and I truly marvel at the fact that I'm able to sit here on the other side of the world from the great majority of you and conduct a long-form talk show. Now, again, to the very best of my knowledge, I am the first to conduct a long form talk show. That means 3 or 4 or 5 hours, whatever, every single weekend from the flip side of the world. That's something that, to the best of my knowledge, has not been done before. That's not to say reporters, obviously, have not reported from the flip side of the world, but to do a talk show of this nature every weekend from one side of the world to the other, I do believe this is a first. Really is a first. Isn't that something? West of the Rockies, Olin in Culver City. How about that?
Yes. On May the 20th, 2003, Robert Felix said that there is a 100-mile-long string of underwater volcanoes bigger than the Himalayan mountains under the Arctic Ocean. Now, that could account for melting the Arctic ice sheet and killing a lot of fish. And I was wondering, those typhoons you've been having that have been built up to record-breaking size,
yes,
are they coming from an area where there's warm ocean water and underwater volcanoes?
Not necessarily, Olin. The typhoons that we have get here in pretty much the traditional way. Some of them have formed all the way off the west coast of Mexico, as typhoons tend to. They begin as hurricanes, of course, off the North American coast, and then they travel across the Pacific. Now, the reason they get to be so large, as compared to hurricanes, is because the Pacific is so much larger. In other words, they have a very great deal of ocean to travel across before they hit land here on the Asian continent. Now, many typhoons also begin very close by. For example, the recent one we had actually became a tropical storm and then became a typhoon in the space of about 24 hours. And it did that to the let's see, it would be to the east of the Philippine Islands, and then in just no time at all became a very, very large typhoon and slammed into the Philippines. So they can either form very close by or very far away. Off the Mexican coast is pretty typical. Now, as far as undersea volcanoes are concerned, I think it's been pretty well documented that the melting of the Arctic is due to a sort of a runaway process that has begun. In other words, as the world begins to warm, as we get more sunshine, the ice melts. Now, the ice has traditionally reflected sunlight, but as more ice melts, there is more water to absorb the sunlight instead of reflect it. And so the process begins a sort of an acceleration that feeds on itself. That's what the scientists are worried about, that we get a kind of a triggering point where it really gets going. And we're watching, I should say, the scientists are watching all that very, very carefully. Let's go to the international line and say hello, Charlene, from Calgary, Alberta.
Hello, Art. And I'm so proud of you bringing upon to this world the much-needed radio talk show that we needed. So having said that, I have a question, Art, and I have a few comments to follow. Shouldn't life be getting better, Art? You know, after
It should be, yes.
You think, yes. You think we'd be learning something, but it should be getting a lot healthier and, you know, all towards more compassion for all living species. But if we look at our world for the way it is, the way it's been going, on the path it's been going, there's so much more and more and more corruption. And right from the top on down, that what chance does anyone have with all that? So I say that what we need on this path of exploitation to life really requires a real purification intervention, Art, and in other words, a beyond miracle, because I don't see how individuals can really change its course for what power there is behind it all. And I wish for all of us a much better world, and sometime soon before it's all gone. And we need someone to really make the difference, to have a caring path, to help life, to help all of life, not to hurt as it's doing. It seems to me that people are being coerced in a very camouflaged manner, and I'm sure you're well aware of what I'm speaking of. It makes it look as though we have such sophisticated technology, but really it's so barbaric. With all this high sophistication, it's really a barbaric world. So what's it all for?
I'm not sure, Charlene. That's the great question, isn't it?
It sure is, Art. And thank God for your talk show.
You're very welcome. I don't think that we know. I really don't think that we know. It's like asking what is the purpose of life. And my guest, of course, was talking about the carrying capacity of the Earth. I think that really is the big question, and that's population. How much population can the Earth really support? Well, at some point, Mother Nature may have a word with us about that. Mother Nature, somebody said, does not get angry. Mother Nature gets even. And there's really no evil intent in that. It's just that if there get to be too many of us, Mother Nature will figure something out. It may be something very small, like a little virus or who knows what. This certainly deserves more conversation than we've been able to give it tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night. We'll have a good guest, Jim Bell. I like those bells. So from the other side of the world, see you tomorrow night. Good night.